Welcome to a Business News Briefing. It's Tuesday, the 2nd of September. I'm Alec Hogg. Full show for you today. Politics is dirty, geopolitics even more so. Tributes keep pouring in for the late Neil de Beer. The curious story about the corpse of the Zambian president that's sitting here in South Africa. Differing prospects for diamonds and gold. The one keeps hitting new records, the other one bringing down the Botswana economy. And then in local company news, not good news for Glencore. It appears as though the last of the ferrochrome producers here is leaving, closing down. And we then have some good news that we hope with the Eden Park game from Rossi. Can South Africa win? Something that hasn't happened for decades. Rugby is the biggest game since the World Cup final. And sorry if I put you off last Thursday. I had the idea that we were playing on the Saturday. Of course, it's the Saturday coming up. I sat in front of my television screen waiting in vain for the crossing. I think they were playing something about, was it cycling? Some very inane issue anyway. And then I realized after having a look at the at Gemini that I had the week wrong. So my apologies. But it was a good tailpiece on Thursday, wasn't it? Okay, on to matters of a much serious report. There's lots going on between Pretoria and Washington right now, intense negotiations to the degree that Cyril Ramaphosa missed out, consciously we believe, on joining the other members of the BRICS in Tianjin, where they're getting together for an anti-West fest. Now, this could be interpreted as good news. It could be interpreted as South Africa looking at America and realizing there's lots of investable income and capital that can come from the United States, whereas not so much from the BRICS nations. Well, that will be shown in time. But what is more in the spotlight at the moment is a battle going on between two South Africans who are based in Washington. The one is a former journalist called Philip van Niekerk, who still writes regularly for the Daily Maverick and the Media 24-owned City Press, who is alleging that a venture capitalist called André Pienaar, again, South African connection obviously, is behind South Africa's troubles with Washington. Pienaar's owned National Security News, on the other hand, has counterclaimed that van Niekerk is being paid by and an agent of MTN, which has a major exposure, as we all know, to America's greatest enemy, Iran. Here's the piece. Let's have a listen. Well, BizNews has been brought into a shadow war that's occurring in Washington. André Pienaar versus Philip van Niekerk. Here's the background. In the corridors of power in Washington, D.C., a battle of influence is being waged over the future of U.S.-South Africa relations. At the heart of this conflict are two South Africans, André Pienaar and Philip van Niekerk. Theirs is a story of ambition, intrigue, and serious accusations. First, let's meet André Pienaar, a businessman and founder of the investigations firm Good Governance Group and the cybersecurity venture capital fund C5 Capital. He's a longtime supporter of the center-right Democratic Alliance Party, but Pienaar is accused of being the mastermind behind a disinformation campaign that has strained relations between Washington and Pretoria. He's suspected of spreading false narratives of white genocide in South Africa and attempting to paint the government as anti-Semitic. Pienaar vehemently denies these claims. His company C5 has also faced scrutiny for its role in a bid for a major Pentagon contract. On the other side, we have Philip van Niekerk, a former journalist here in South Africa, turned Washington-based consultant. He's the managing director of Calabar Africa and a paid consultant for the telecoms giant MTN Group. Van Niekerk is accused of a serious conflict of interest, publishing articles in many South African outlets critical of US foreign policy without disclosing his financial ties to MTN, a company with significant investments in Iran. He's also been accused of corporate espionage and using unlawfully obtained information in a smear campaign. The animosity between Pienaar and Van Niekerk is a clash of narratives. Pienaar, with his conservative connections, is seen as pushing an anti-ANC agenda. Van Niekerk, a lobbyist for a major corporation with ties to the current government, Cyril Ramaphosa is a former chairman of MTN, is working to protect his client's interests. This is a high-stakes game of influence, where the line between journalism, lobbying, and propaganda has become dangerously blurred. And as the accusations fly, the relationship between the two nations hangs in the balance. Well, if that sounds all sounds a little bit beyond the pale for you and conspiracy theories, etc., consider the story that is which was published this morning in the FT News briefing. Our partners had someone on the plane that was interfered with by Russians. Let's join them.
Officials suspect Russia is behind GPS interference on a plane carrying European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. My colleague Henry Foy was actually on the plane with von der Leyen. Tell me exactly what happened. What was it like to be on that plane?
President von der Leyen was on a 7-country, 4-day tour of frontline states of the EU. These are states in the east of Europe, close to Russia. And the trip was designed to bring attention to the threat posed by Russia and the need for European governments to spend more on defense. We were flying from Warsaw to a city called Plovdiv in central Bulgaria on a chartered jet that the Commission President had chartered for this purpose. And on the approach to Plovdiv, we lost altitude. We came down preparing for landing. And then all of us on board realized that we were circling the airport. And we had been for a while. We were way past the planned landing time. And it was only when we actually got on the ground that we were told the reason for the delay was because the GPS services weren't working. The pilot was not able to use the standard electronic navigational systems and had to land the plane manually using maps.
Do we know if this plane in particular was targeted? How does it work?
From what I understand from talking to officials who've been briefed on it, these are Bulgarian officials involved in the aviation management system in that country. They say that the GPS system around the area of the airport was disabled. Ours was the only flight in and out for a large amount of time. So it appears as if that particular flight was targeted with a more regional GPS spoofing or interference of some kind.
Has this kind of thing happened before?
This is really on the rise. A lot of European governments, particularly those close to Russia, have said that since February 2022, with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, these incidents have really been increasing. A lot of Baltic states, these are Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and Finland on the Baltic Sea in the north, have been complaining about regular use of GPS jamming or GPS interference, which is affecting commercial flights. And some governments have even said, look, if this continues at the rate, we're going to see major air crashes. There's a huge risk to the public.
What is the European Commission? What are other EU officials saying about this?
The Commission confirmed our reporting and confirmed that this was being treated as a suspected Russian interference operation. They've said that, frankly, this justifies the trip. It shows the constant, daily almost, efforts by Russia to destabilize frontline Eastern European state. It is quite unsettling, and it was unsettling for all of us on board to know that a foreign actor, and as I said, suspected Russian interference, knew that the president of the European Commission was on the plane and did something that in some circumstances really could have endangered her safety.
Henry Foy is the FT's Brussels bureau chief. Thanks, Henry.
Thank you so much.
Hectic stuff, isn't it? Oh, I remember on a plane ride, more than 10 years ago, when we were circling the airport for an extended period and had to do the brace position. I haven't flown SA Airlink ever since. I'm sure it it was an isolated example, but something sticks with you when you go into foam and you have all the fire engines around, and Henry's sounding pretty relaxed for somebody who's just been through that experience. Moving on to the rather sad story of the passing of Neil De Beer, someone who was very close to us here at BizNews. The tributes stream him. We'll have that just after we've heard from our commercial partner.
Michelle's a mom who traded in her Fiat 500 for this beast right here. But why the momentous move, huh?
I needed something bigger to keep up with my growing son and his many sports bags.
When you traded in your car with We Buy Cars, was it an easy conversion?
I see what you did there. The process was just so easy. I was given a tablet, had to sign, and that was it.
Basically, We Buy Cars is no mess, no fuss. Okay, it was nice chatting. We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Over the years that they worked so closely together, Chris Dane got to know Neil De Beer incredibly well. She's put together this package on the tributes, which continue pouring in after the death of the politician over the weekend.
Not many people die a legend, but such are the tributes that are continuing to pour in for BizNews' beloved commentator, Neil De Beer, who passed away at the weekend. Even from politicians he used to criticize. Democratic Alliance leader John Steenhuisen said Neil's fearless personality made him a force to be reckoned with. BOSA leader Mamosi Maimane expressed the hope that Neil's courage will continue to inspire a new generation of leaders. One SA Movement's chair, Michael Louis, pointed out that South Africa is poorer for the loss of an important voice of truth. Saldanha Bay Mayor Andre Truter wrote that a big tree has fallen. Writers, commentators wrote at length about Neil's commitment to truth. I think it was beautifully encapsulated by Farouk Araya in his opinion piece. He wrote, "History will remember Neil as the most elevating and inspiring man of our age." The very essence of his spirit of resistance were in those words. Meanwhile, thousands of messages have been posted to the BizNews tribute show and on social media by viewers in mourning for their icon. The last word must go to the United Independent Movement, Neil's party, whose SG, Jacques Talliot, Neil ignited a fire that cannot be put out. He woke us all up out of our complacency.
Lovely stuff, Chris, and we miss him. Well, the battle over who owns the corpse of Zambian President Lungu continues. He died in South Africa, and now the successor, H.H. Chilima, wants the corpse back in Zambia, but the family don't. Our partners at The Economist put this leader together for their latest edition. It's read by an actor.
Who owns the body of a dead Zambian president? It's not a question that is asked very often, but it is vexing the southern African country run by Edgar Lungu from 2015 to 2021. His family has tried to have him buried in South Africa, where he died on June 5th. Zambia, led by his political rival, Hakainde Hichilema, wants him home for a state funeral, a wish endorsed by South Africa's highest court on August 26th. The episode underscores the political significance of funeral rites in Africa. The Lungu family has resisted entreaties to send the corpse back because it does not want Mr. Hichilema anywhere near the body. That reflects some mutual animus. Lungu had Mr. Hichilema jailed on spurious charges. Mr. Hichilema's administration curtailed Lungu's post-presidential perks and charged members of his family with corruption offences. They deny wrongdoing. Other motives are at play. The government does not want Lungu's party to use his coffin as a campaigning tool in next year's election. The Lungu family may also see the location of the burial as a negotiating tool in their other legal battles. Most bizarrely, Lungu's political party has suggested that Mr. Hichilema wants to use the body for witchcraft, an unfounded allegation. This whole case has gotten out of hand, sighs an advisor to the president. And yet Lungu's case is far from the first involving a cadaver and a power struggle. After Levi Mwanawasa, another Zambian leader, died in 2008, parties fought over the use of his coffin at political events. The family of Robert Mugabe, the Zimbabwean leader who died in 2019, still resists attempts to move his body from his village to a national monument, perhaps in the knowledge that his corpse is an asset in their battles with the regime. The deaths of presidents in Congo and Malawi were kept secret to influence political successions. Lungu may be dead, but the dispute over his corpse lives on.
Still with Africa, as diamonds dull, Botswana appears to be losing its shine. Here's our colleagues at Bloomberg.
Botswana is losing its shine. The diamond-fueled boom that made it one of Africa's richest nations is faltering as lab-grown gems eat into the market for natural diamonds. For more, we're joined by Bloomberg's Matthew Hill. Matthew, well, you know, up until recently, Botswana has always been held up as an African success story. What has gone wrong? Was the country simply too reliant on this single resource?
That's a really important point. People have always pointed to Botswana as being an African country that has used its natural resource wealth to develop the nation responsibly, to educate its people and provide better services. But suddenly in Botswana, things have drastically changed, as you say, because the diamond market has changed so drastically with lab-grown gems coming onto the scene and having a really serious impact on prices. Now, Botswana depends on diamonds for about 80% of its exports. About 33% or a third of government revenues, and the sector makes up for about a quarter of the total economy. So when there's pain in that market, the country really feels it. Because of that, we've seen debt levels in Botswana as the country resorts to borrowing to balance its budget, to pay for its budget, nearly doubling just in the space of 3 years. So the impact has been really, really drastic.
Well, gold, on the other hand, continues to hit record highs. Can it keep going? Again, here's our colleagues at Bloomberg.
What signal is gold sending you right now?
Well, precious metals in general have been sending the signal for some time this year. I mean, obviously, very strong performance across the board, and silver now outperforming gold, actually, on that ratio that a lot of metals players watch. So pretty much a signal of concerns around debasement of currencies or inflation containment and the activity of central banks going forward, particularly major central banks. There's, of course, other supply and demand factors, such as sort of reserve managers acquiring more precious metals. All of these are in play. But really, if you're a Martian and came to Earth today and saw what's been happening to precious metals, what's happening to the long end of the bond curve, it's really telling you.
A first trade a Martian might make if he arrived here on Earth would be to go, I'm gold looking looking good, sell long bonds, sell duration. Is that the trade that Marshall would make?
If this Marshall was a momentum player, yes. And, you know, I should be sort of screaming here.
Really getting into the weeds here.
Exactly. As a contrarian player, I should, you know, be thinking about taking the other side. But actually, there are points where you're at such an important macro cross juncture.
Yep.
And we are exactly at one of those. And I think you can kind of see the writing on the wall. It's difficult to sort of time exactly when it plays out in, you know, in tandem. But I think it has begun. And this is really the time where we're starting to take quite a bit of that right tail, if you like, on inflation risk, you know. So, you know, you're pricing obviously perfection in markets. We know why, right? So conditions economically are okay.
Yep.
Fed's about to cut more.
Yeah.
You know, things are good, right? We have some more fiscal juice, you know, the big, beautiful bill in the U.S. So what's the problem, right? More to come out of Germany. So that's why stocks love it.
Can gold and stocks continue to rise together? Or are we at an inflection point in that relationship as well? Is gold telling us something about where stocks will head?
Yeah, I mean, I think bonds probably are the trigger to watch. I see the trend, certainly I see the trend in gold and precious as more structural in nature, and this reserve accumulation matters, and I do think we are in a, you know, if the long end game is a financial repression game, which probably seems the more likely outcome with regards to the debt load we have and the interest rates we're paying, then certainly the gold trend can continue over the long run.
So why should I care? Well, if you're invested in gold, keep going. It's so it seems. Well, talking about investments, as far as the JSE is concerned, on our stock market this morning, we had some big news coming out. First of all, from the premier retailer in South Africa, Shoprite Holdings, it grew sales 9%. The big keep getting bigger, and it's gone above 250 billion rand in the year to end June, the first time that it has broken that barrier. That's about 60% of every rand that we account for in South Africa in our GDP. Bottom line rose 16%, dividend up 10%. Checkers, the standout. 60-60 is going great guns. Maybe that was because of the way that they supported the Springboks and even got their colors onto the Springbok jersey for a period. And good news is that jobs were created there. Bad news, ShopRite and USave, who service the lower income area, were decidedly slower than the group as a whole. And also the ShopRite management are battling to offload the furniture business. More bad news, I'm afraid, coming from Glencore. It says that it started restructuring talks at its ferrochrome partnership with locally listed Marafi Resources. The story here is that four of the five ferrochrome plants, these are plants that take chrome and turn it into ferrochrome, and that's exported. Four of the five have been mothballed, and the fifth has now been put in hold. Reason, Eskom's increase in electricity prices make it uneconomic. In June, the South African government said, we'll work it out, we'll find a way. Well, nothing yet, and so Glencore says, we might not be waiting for you. A little bit like the story that's going on at ArcelorMittal, where the Newcastle long steel plant now is being put very firmly into closed down mode. And then some resilient numbers from the motor retailing group, Motus. The economy is struggling in South Africa. You don't need to ask anybody outside of those who live here to understand what's happening there. But in the year to end June, this company reacted by getting its management sharper and managed to increase the cash from operations by 60%. So that's just a management approach when you think that the revenues, the sales were only up 1%. Now what it did there was got more cash flow, paid off more debt, bottom line was up 5%, dividend was up 6%. So all round things looking better there. However, Motus did sell its Mercedes-Benz franchise in the UK, and that was due to difficult conditions there as well. Also, the retail and the rental operations were down by 6% in the year to end June. Tough going if you're a business in South Africa, particularly in the motor industry sector. Well, it hopefully won't be tough going for the Bokke over the weekend. They're going to the Fortress Eden Park to try and make it five in a row over the All Blacks. Here's our tail piece for today, which has a look at what we can expect in the biggest game since the Rugby World Cup final.
I think it's probably the biggest game since the Rugby World Cup final.
So 1937, that's the last time the Springboks won there. 1994 is the last time anyone other than the All Blacks won there. We have only beaten the All Blacks in New Zealand four times since readmission. We've also drawn twice over there since readmission. 16-16 in Wellington in 2019 before the Rugby World Cup, and then 18-all in Auckland of all places. Ironically, that draw was the first of these 50 unbeaten matches for the All Blacks at Eden Park.
I think it's more about the heritage and the history of the game, and always know the Springboks and New Zealand and All Blacks are special games. You know, there's so much history, even if they come and play in Cape Town, you know, now with 2 week tours, you know, next year is the greatest rivalry. But it's a special thing in the sense that, you know, we never thought we'll beat them four times in a row. We are now in four times in a row. And I'm pretty sure, like, when they gave us 57, the next weekend we were so desperate and we lost by 2 points on the Alistair. You know, so they can turn it around like this. And we have to turn the history around, not like this, with a lot of craft. And it's just a great build-up, and it's great that they are taking us there. But it's going to be intimidating. It's going to be nerve-wracking. It's going to be tough. But flipper, I think everybody is excited. And I think that's where rugby should be.
Wow, 3.5 days to go. And the biggest game since the Rugby World Cup final that we are going to be thoroughly enjoying, no doubt. Well, we'll be back with the briefing again tomorrow. Until then, cheerio.